Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hello, welcome to the IGN UK podcast. If only there were things to talk about this week.
I know, right?
Does anyone know if anything going on with PlayStation?
I heard a little thing happened.
Yeah, just a little things. A few things happen. Bumper episode this week. We've got not only all the PS5 reveal chat, not necessarily all the games, all the ones we want to talk about, we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And the box itself, which I'm sure will cause much heated debate.
Oh, yes.
I was going to say in this room. We're all in different rooms.
In this world of ours.
Yeah. Alongside that, we've also got Last of Us 2 chat. The review embargo was today, June the 12th. Me and Dale have played it. And at the end of the podcast, after feedback, we've got a roughly 15-minute chat, me and Dale, talking our impressions, completely spoiler-free, absolutely no spoilers, don't worry about that. But we put it at the end just because we're aware some people are on complete blackout about this game, don't even want to hear what people think of it, which I kind of understand, but I guarantee you, there are absolutely no story spoilers in that section, but I understand if you don't want to listen to it at all. So, yeah. Before further ado, though, we've got something a bit more important we want to talk about this
week
that we feel like we need to address. I believe, Joe, you've got an email.
Yeah, so we got this email from an anonymous listener, and it feels very much worth talking through. So, it says, "Hi all, I hope you're staying safe and sane in these extraordinary times. With so much going on around the world at present, I've been reflecting on the content I enjoy and its diversity. Apologies for the length of the email, but I feel it's an important topic. I've listened to the IGN UK podcast for close to a decade, and one thing that has always stood out is the lack of host diversity. From memory, the hosts have nearly all been white men, bar two women. I've tried Googling for clarification, but very little has come up, so I may be wrong there. Apologies if that's the case. Regardless, the optics is incredibly skewed and doesn't fully reflect today's audiences of games, film, and TV. When a certain trio left IGN UK, I'd hoped we might see more diversity with their successors. It sadly did not seem to be the case. I level no blame or malice at the next generation of hosts. They're clearly good at their jobs and would deem the best candidates. But what can the community, of which IGN is a massive and very influential part, do to change this? Is the long history of hosts a true reflection of the candidates that apply? Can more be done to diversify, thus offering different opinions and experiences to listeners? If there is an overwhelming amount of applicants from one demographic, can IGN do more to enrich the talent pool at an earlier stage via work experience, scholarships, or online courses? I want to finish by clarifying I enjoy this podcast. I would have stopped listening long ago if I didn't. I've interacted numerous times with the show in the past, as well as with various hosts on Twitter. Despite that, I feel it's the responsibility of listeners to push content creators when it comes to certain matters, especially in the current climate." So we saw this, and this is something I personally have thought about a lot in the past, and obviously now. And it's like, it's absolutely correct to call us out on this. The IGN UK podcast in particular is overwhelmingly white and male. And we've always had, I think we've had trouble with that. And I think it's led to less accusations of a lack of diversity, but we've certainly had people talk to us about how we can have one very set perspective. And we've been called laddie, which is hilarious to me, given the kind of people we are. But I think I think that comes from the kind of, you know, the demographics we come from. And yes, like, we haven't been good enough at that. And I wouldn't say there's, I think the anonymous listener raises some very good points and some very fair points. The point I really agree with is that, this section, is the long history of hosts a true reflection of the candidates that apply? Can more be done to diversify, thus offering different opinions and experiences to listeners? On the first point, it mostly is a true reflection of the candidates that apply for jobs at this company. I've been involved in the hiring process once directly and a couple of times indirectly. Overwhelmingly, we see white male applicants, and I think that's part of our audience. And I think it's a spiraling problem, because the more we show white male representation, the more white males will feel, you know, part of the community, and the less perhaps other people will. And that's something we can do something about. Can more be done to diversify? Absolutely. So another point here, if there is an overwhelming amount of applicants from one demographic, can we do more to enrich that? This is something me and Alex specifically this week have talked about. I can't tell you that we have an exact solution for this, but I can tell you that the next time we hire, this isn't going to be a case of just putting our job application up on Ziff Davis Careers site and the IGN UK Twitter, because those are places where our audience, which is already entrenched in a certain, you know, like in a certain demographic. And that, like, obviously this is not to say that we don't want that demographic to listen to us.
No, exactly.
It's that we perhaps don't do enough to make it clear that we are welcoming to people outside that demographic. And I personally really want us to push into other areas to broaden the amount of candidates and to get a more interesting set of voices, because, like, fuck me, I listen to enough podcasts with white males on them, and, like, I get bored. And, like, that's apparently meant to fucking speak to me.
Exactly.
And, like, I agree completely. We can do much more. We haven't done well enough, and we will do better. And I promise you, as soon as we have a better sense, like, this is all quite... We're not hiring right now, and it's not something we've been considering.
And we don't hire regularly either.
We don't, unfortunately.
It's not an easy, quick fix.
To the point of work experience scholarships or online courses, this is, to be fully transparent, that's usually a case of money and legal stuff. In terms of taking interns, that can cost a lot more money than you might think. Like, not even just paying interns. The way that the law works around bringing someone into your office can have a lot of hidden costs, and it's something that higher-ups within our organisation have not gone for before. Work experience is something we could do and is something we should talk about. But again, unpaid work experience is not cool. No. Unless it's part of a wider, like, educational course. But this is all stuff we are going to talk about. And, this is why we wanted to put this up top. We do need to do better. Like, this isn't us avoiding the fact that our podcast isn't... Our podcast and our office isn't good enough at this. And we will do better. And we will tell you as soon as we have more concrete ways of dealing with that.
Absolutely. No, I agree completely.
Yeah,
I think I've nailed it, though.
I've been quite silent through that, and just because I think Joe speaks for all of us. But I also want to point out, if you're on the outside, this industry can look incredibly racist. It can also look incredibly classist, which doesn't help when systemic racism in the world has meant that a lot of people from other backgrounds don't necessarily come from places with lots of money. And one of the reasons why I've been lucky enough to get into this industry is I did a few internships earlier on in my life. I did GameSpot and I did PC Gamer. Both of them were unpaid.
Yeah,
and my parents helped me with money to go and live in London, to go and live in Bath, in hotels while I did those. That's not something that everyone can afford to do, and that's a barrier to entry for more types of people. And hopefully IGN can help become part of that change in the future. And you know, I think we all recognise that we've done wrong.
This is not to say, I feel like when we've chosen from hiring pools, we've chosen the right people, which is why I think, you know, I love working with all the people I work with. But there is absolutely no doubt that we have not surfaced those things well enough to get a diversity of voices. And I would love for us to do better on that. And I'm very glad that anonymous listener, you emailed us about this, because it's a great opportunity to talk about it.
I think it just echoes the sentiment in the world at the moment of it's not enough to just think these things anymore. 100%. You have to actively do them.
Yeah. So and we will do.
Yep. Cool. Bit of a change of pace. Let's talk about the PlayStation 5.
Okay.
Shall we do that?
Yes, please.
I hope that that little chat helped a few people and helped you understand where we're coming from.
Yeah. I know we keep talking about it. I really hope that this doesn't feel... I really want to say to people, this isn't us washing our hands and saying we're going to do better. And, like, we are looking into this right now. It's just a podcast isn't the right place to talk about it.
And, unfortunately, we're in lockdown, which makes it even harder to actively enforce a lot of...
Yeah.
If we wanted an intern, that is just not possible in the current environment at all. So... it is being looked at. For now, though, the PlayStation 5. Let's start, before we get onto the games, the box. I know we have a varied opinion on this already.
Yeah.
Because, Joe, I believe you have, I'm not going to say vehement, but, or repulsed.
I think it looks shit. I don't know what it is. I genuinely think, when I look at the PS1, pretty functional. When I look at the PS2, I think that is a beautiful bit of equipment. PS3, weird. PS4, I think, will age very well. I think this has aged badly overnight. Like, it looks so gross to me. And, like, the people pointing out that it looks like a router, like, there is literally a router that looks exactly like the PS5.
Yeah.
And what I think me and Matt and Tom Marks from the US office, while we were working the conference last night, were talking. And I can't remember who in the chat said, the digital version looks nicer without the hump caused by a disk drive. And I was just screaming, like, no console should have a hump. You shouldn't have a hump on a console. Like, that's just bad. I don't know what's going on.
I have a more tempered... I don't personally mind it. I don't love it by any means, but I do... When I first saw it, I was like, ooh, I'm not sure. When I saw the pictures of it laying horizontal, I think it looks a lot better. I don't think it looks as odd, but I normally have all my consoles laying down anyway. I don't use them as towers. But the one thing that gets me is, A, it just looks like a nightmare to clean, because not only is it white, which PlayStations traditionally aren't, but it also seems to be very shiny. I prefer a matte finish because it just looks a lot cleaner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's weird, isn't it? Because it's got that weird wraparound shell to me. It looks a bit like, you know, when you've got like a Filofax on your shelf and you've got papers inside?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
It's like a badly kept binder.
It's hard to tell until I've seen one close up and actually touched it, but it looks... like those that wraparound you're talking about, it looks like it could be very flimsy, and I'm scared I'll just crack it. But I don't. I've no doubt it'll be a well-made piece of kit because they're not going to make something that shatters in your hand. But
I like that it's not just a box, but also I don't need it to be more than a box. And also the way I don't have like a cabinet like a lot of people will have with their TV on top. We've got a slightly more ramshackle approach, so literally all my consoles are just dumped behind it. So I'm never going to see this console, like, after it comes out of the box, it's going to get plugged in and I won't see it again. Especially if I buy the digital one. If I don't know where I'm leaning yet, but if I do buy the all-digital one, there's literally not even going to be a need to put a disc in it. So
I honestly feel like, unless you're a collector, the only people in the world who really need the disc version are games journalists, because places still send out physical promo discs.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you're a big 4K Blu-ray fiend.
Of course, yeah. if you're a big 4K Blu-ray fiend, you'll have a big 4K Blu-ray fiend machine. Like,
well, that is true. The classic fiend machine from Samsung. okay. And ultimately, do you know what? We're talking about the box. I'm of the opinion... like Matt, I hide it away somewhere. I don't look at it anyway. So ultimately, I don't.
Just
really
saying, the Series X looks so much nicer. That's
I do agree. I think that's a very clean design.
Yeah.
But again, I haven't seen how that looks on its side, because I would have it on its side. But there we go.
Chunky boy.
Let's get on. Should we get on to the actual games, because they're much more interesting?
Agreed. Let's do it.
Let's kick it off with a big one. Horizon Forbidden West.
As we found out overnight, officially just called Horizon Forbidden West, even though there is a 2 on the logo.
Yeah, a little numerals.
Yeah.
It looks like set in San Francisco, or at least partly set in San Francisco, because you can see the big old bridge. It's hard to tell if there was any gameplay in that, but it did just look absolutely incredible.
It just looks ludicrously lush in a way that anyone releasing a new console will be so happy with.
Was there a date for that?
I don't believe they said anything about that, when.
That feels like one that we'll wait a little bit for, because it definitely looks like that's like some of the other games that we saw is bespoke PS5.
Now, and here's a point. I know we are talking about Horizon Forbidden West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many, if any, launch games did we get yesterday?
Because that's the thing.
Because Miles Morales is not a sequel. It's an expansion. So,
yeah.
What, is that a confirmed thing?
That happened overnight. It's not clear whether it's a standalone expansion or whether it's a PS5 remaster with an extra chunk.
I guess it'll be standalone like they did with
First Light.
Second Son. First Light. I was heavily betting on Horizon being a launch game, but
yeah, same.
I can't believe if it was, they would have said it, surely. They would have made that splash.
The only thing to me is, like, they've said they're going to do more stuff. Are they going to have, a specific launch event, launch games event, where it's like, here is the stuff, which would explain the weird mixed messaging over Spider-Man, because then they can go, Spider-Man PS5 is a launch game. And it has Miles Morales in it.
And there's obviously going to be a ton of third-party games. A lot we don't know when they're coming out. Like, we don't know when Assassin's is, when Watch Dogs is.
Oh, we know Assassin's Creed is launch day. They've said
that. We know
that's
launch day. Yeah. Okay, so. Well, that's a big launch game. You can assume there'll be a new Call of Duty available at launch.
Yeah.
But yeah, is there any exclusives? I can't remember. I'm just looking through the list of games we're going to talk about. I don't know if... Is Gran Turismo a launch game?
There was no date on that, but it probably will be.
And that got quite a lot. The entire latter end of that trailer was just gameplay. So.
Yeah.
If you launch with Demon's Souls Remake, people will go mad for that.
Yeah,
but it's
not a system seller.
No. It will be for some, but not for me.
Matt, sorry, you were talking about Horizon, though. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, let's go back to Horizon.
Me and Joe were talking about Horizon last night, and I gave a little anecdote of when the original came out. My housemate would occasionally pop in and just go, "How's it going?" And every time I would say exactly the same thing, which was just, "This is the best game ever made." I recognise that Horizon is not the best game ever made, but at the time, I was in such a zen with it. I am head over heels for that world. Mm. And seeing that world with organic life in it again, and all of the little tidbits to... You know how there was the opposite tribe that turned up that had got the elephants with the howdahs on?
Mm.
That little promise there that, okay, people are riding the bigger creatures now. I just want Aloy to get up on the giant, thunder hawk, birds on the back of the bigger T-Rexes. I want to be able to do that.
That little scene at the end of the trailer did remind me a lot of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, the mummy.
Are they Oliphants?
Well, so Oliphants is the casual name for them. They're Mummikill.
Am I thinking of Timothy Oliphant?
Timothy Oliphant, yeah.
Yeah. classic hitman actor. sidetrack me. But yeah, apart from it looking absolutely stunning, what I want from the sequel is, I enjoyed the first Horizon so much, I wasn't 100% in on the story.
Right.
So I want to see... even to a point where I can't really remember too much.
Wasn't she born out of a wall? Happened. Wasn't that a thing? She born out a wall?
There was weird times. I'll definitely have to do a recap. I might even do a replay. I did start replaying it a few months ago, actually, and just gave up. But I might go back to it.
I quite like the story. I quite like Lance Riddick as well in it. He's quite cool.
My issue with Horizon was always that, A... Zelda came out, but B, it was, I loved the moment to moment, I love the mechanics, I love the bow, I love the weak point fighting against big creatures, the way you take those things down is really satisfying, it felt the closest to like a mainstream take on what Monster Hunter does to me in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I never got on with the story, and I loved the look of the world, but I didn't like crossing it, and I didn't like doing things in it outside of the moment-to-moment stuff.
I
just love Forbidden West to be more built around that feeling of, like, I don't even know exactly what I want it to be. I just want it to not be a normal open-world game. I want it to feel, like, momentous, in the literal sense, like, moment-to-moment things happening across that place, rather than just, like, go here, have a conversation, shoot a dinosaur, come back.
I think probably you want what I want from it is that, you know how the thing that Zelda does so well is when you come into an environment, there's a sense of awe because you have discovered something, rather than just going to a place on a map that is built around a location designed for an activity to happen.
Yeah.
Because there's not that signposting in Zelda. When you get to something, there is that discovery of, like, okay, what does this do? How do I work with it?
Yeah.
And I think Horizon's never going to quite have that, because it's always going to be a little bit more in the more traditional mould.
Mm.
But I think being able to give us the sense of discovery that is verging towards Zelda, rather than feeling like I'm going to a place that's got a question mark on it.
Yeah.
I think that's where it needs to go.
In a very broad sense, it's more like world design over level design is kind of what I want it to be.
Maybe the reason they haven't given any sort of release date is they're waiting to see when Zelda comes out.
Yeah.
So they can avoid
that's
it.
That's a good point. Fuck, because there could still be
big
Zelda
bow and arrow worlds
this year. That's insane.
There could be, Joe. There could be. Hold on to that hope in your heart.
I will.
But for now, more PlayStation. We briefly touched on it. Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Yes.
That was the question I was going to ask you. Because when I first saw it, I was like, they would call it Spider-Man 2 if it's a full game, surely.
See, I just thought they were being bold with it. Like, I fully bought this as a sequel. I thought they were being like, Spider-Man was the first game, Spider-Man Miles Morales is the second game. Like, you are playing a different person.
It'd just be bizarre to me if they just completely got rid of Peter Parker's protagonist without... I suppose there could be an event at the start of that game that stops that happening, but...
Well, we know it's not a sequel, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever it is, they're not doing that. But I am still fully into the idea of this thing. Like, the Miles Peter relationship was one of the best parts of Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's a game that I started out not giving a shit about and slowly becoming more and more in love with over the course of that game. And a big part of it is how, like, surprisingly well rendered those relationships are, and particularly the Miles stuff. Did either of you play all the DLC?
Yeah,
I did, yeah.
Like, so I really loved those elements of hearing Miles Morales phoning Peter Parker and telling him about how his training's going as you play through those DLC packs, and like, it all does feel like it's leading up. I kind of half expected them to do another expansion where you play him on the PS4 version.
I thought they might do this expansion like you play as Miles, and then the sequel is maybe you play as both of them. You can switch between them in a way.
Yeah.
And they, like, one thing when I watched that trailer, they're leaning big into the love that people have put into the Spider-Verse, I think.
Oh, 100%.
The music, I was fully expecting the game to be called, like, Marvel Spider-Man Spider-Verse or something, like, just for them to fully go into it. But, yeah, it's gonna be fun. If it's just more of that Spider-Man combat with hopefully a good story, then I'm into it.
And they did it, like, they've said, you know, all that stuff they were talking about with the, you know, when they were showing Spider-Man PS4 on PS5 and it was like, there are no loading times, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've said that in blurbs and stuff like that. So I think we're getting this, like, incredibly seamless version of the first game with Miles Morales in it. I kind of expect it to be a full remaster with the game at this point. But, yeah, I'm super into the idea of it.
Exactly.
I'll just see where we get to on having to play all of it again to get to that content, but
very good point, young man. One game that obviously looks incredible but also looks absolutely horrible and I won't play it is Resident Evil Village.
Yeah.
Is it Resident Evil 8 or is it Resident Evil Village or is it Resident Evil 8?
I think
Village?
It's Resident Evil 8 Village. Let me look at the press release. Resident Evil.
I mean, there's definitely, they make out the the numerals for 8, don't they, in the title.
It's being officially referred to as Resident Evil Village.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Which is quite funny to me, because if you at all are into the cricket scene, or played cricket, or have been around cricketers, they use the word village to describe something that's absolutely terrible. Like, if you're village, you're a terrible
cricketer.
Village level cricket. So to me, that's just like, this is Resident Evil Village, as in it's just a poor level of Resident Evil. But it's obviously not, because that trailer did a great job of
making me never want to play the game.
Yeah, exactly. That's the stuff that gets me in horror films, is those sorts of locations, cult vibes, like creepy religion stuff. Like, it had all of that in there, and it had a big old Chris.
That is a big old massive. Chris.
Why have they done that to him? Why does Chris not look the same in any game? He's different every game they make.
But that's going to be the next one. Resident Evil 9, fucked Chris.
Chris Mass. He's put on mass. Oh, that would have been a good little joke. Oh, well, ruined it.
Never mind.
I don't have a lot of... because I'm not into Resi big time. I like watching people play Resi.
Yeah.
I just don't enjoy playing horror games. So
Resi 7 is one of my favourites out of that series. I really like the grislier side of Resi. I like fun and dumb and underground labs and that sort of shit, but there was something about that southern gothic horror that 7 did that I really liked, because it did genuinely felt like it was properly trying to scare you rather than just sort of be a bit gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, where do you come down on first person versus third for Resi?
I generally prefer horror in first, because I think that's... I play a horror game to be scared, and I watch horror films to be scared. I like that they're one of the few genres that is genuinely designed to elicit a response from your lizard brain, I guess. And I think you get that more in first person than you do in third. So yeah, I'm up for it.
Is Village...
it's the same with pornography.
I'm not familiar enough with the wider sort of Resi mythos stuff. Is Village specifically trying to invoke the start of Resi 4?
That's what I got from it.
Because it's like, they've said it's a more action-packed Resi already.
Yeah, okay.
And like, that's that's the obvious touchstone.
Mm.
So it
puts me more into it, because Resi 4 is the only one I've truly ever think is great.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's going for that, maybe I'll jump in.
It feels
it's got a
like
big
time.
Castle, right? Which is Salazar's castle. Mm-hmm. And also, I think the idea of potentially bringing a more Las Plagas-style villain back into it in advance of them doing a Resi 4 remake and sort of making a little bridge there sort of makes sense.
I can definitely see it.
So can I. Do you know what else I can see? And I think everyone saw coming. Gran Turismo is back.
Great.
Do you know what? Every time I see Gran Turismo, I played the hell out of Gran Turismo 3 and 4. I pretty much almost 100%ed both those games. Like, even to the point we had to do those 12-hour races.
Yeah, that's it. I had a friend who was super into Gran Turismo when we were young. And, I remember him talking me through it and just being like, what the fuck are you doing? Why do you give a shit about playing for 12 hours on this boring circle?
Well... the thing is, Joe, if you kept playing there, I think it was there was one particular circuit on the Amalfi Coast. If you won that race, you'd get a load of cash. You'd get a car from it. You could sell for a lot of cash, and then you could upgrade from your Toyota Yaris very quickly.
Great. I preferred Tokyo Rally, where I could be a tank.
That's true. I used to play racing games so much, but recently, bit of Forza, that's about it.
Yeah, I'm a Forza Horizon only kind of racer.
Yeah,
it looks great. It'll show off all the leather physics or whatever's going to be on it. It'll be lovely.
If you're into it, you're into it.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to show how beautiful something looks.
Yes.
Much like whenever they always show an NBA 2K, because basketball games just look incredible. She got a little squeaky floor in the sweat.
Yeah. And they're very contained spaces.
Ratchet and Clank.
I think this
Rift
might be
apart.
The best-looking game at the entire show.
It's definitely up there. I've got another contender for that.
Have you? Later.
But yes. But yeah, it looked. I loved the last one on PS4, and if this one is just more of that, it looked like the amount of worlds they were just showing off through yeah. their little cinema, going through all the rifts.
It
looked incredible.
Absolute dick swinging for the SSD. Like the switching between worlds seamlessly thing is like someone at Sony has gone to Insomniac and been like, can you do that? And they've gone, yeah, probably. And then they've made it, and it's like the best advert for that technology. It's nuts. Yeah. I should
Who
say
needs
what I
Mac when you've got Clank.
I should say what I mean by best looking is like visually. I think it's the best looking game. I don't. It's not my favorite game at the conference, okay.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah.
like
because it looks like a Pixar film that you play.
It's unbelievable. Right?
It's
like
that absolute beautiful smoothness to it, and the fur effect on Ratchet is brilliant.
Yeah, I just thought it was brilliant.
I know exactly. Probably what that game will be, and I hope it is exactly what I think it is.
Yeah.
Just more mad weapons in beautiful places.
Is it?
And
obviously a lot of my time last night watching this was writing news stories, so I missed elements, but was there a gun that turns people into trees?
I haven't rewatched the trailer, so
I might have to go back. Someone mentioned it, and I don't know whether it was them like speculating that that's what it did, or there was actually that gun, but I want that gun.
Just
now.
I've got the trailer up here. I'm just having a little look. Is there a tree gun? Is there a tree gun?
Show me a tree gun.
I'm just watching it for you. It looks amazing. I don't know what that thing is he's riding. It's like a bug.
Yeah, like a little squishy snail boy.
Yeah.
The bit where they're flying a dragon and the dragon flies through to a futuristic world and all that. Oh my god. I love it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Super
beautiful.
Into it.
I want that one. I hope that's a launch one. I don't think they gave any indication of when that one is.
No, I don't believe so.
I want that one.
I want that one.
I want that one.
Kiss it.
Can't do that anymore.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Not the time, mate.
It was never funny at all in the first place. Do you know what? I've never quoted that line until it's been in the news this week for the complete wrong reasons.
Yeah. You're an absolute disgrace, Carly.
I know. I feel very ashamed. Demon's Souls Remake. Again, not for me.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will be into this.
I'm delighted,
Matt,
it's happening.
Did you ever play Demon's Souls?
I've played about half an hour of Demon's Souls. It was before I got into FromSoft, and I got booted by a skeleton off a wall, and I was like, no. So, I mean, game looked great. Like, that graphical overhaul that they've done. I mean, Bluepoint are fantastic at this. Obviously, you've only got to look at Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd hope is that I still think even though there were some improvements to controls in Shadow of Colossus, it still felt I was playing the remake sort of visual laid over the coding of the PlayStation 2 version. And I could still feel a little bit of that like archaicness to the remake of Shadow of Colossus. I hope that they've gone a little bit beyond that for Demon's Souls, because I think Demon's Souls would feel really, really struggling to get through just from my memory of what it was like playing at that point.
I mean,
even
who
Dark
knows,
Souls 1.
Who knows how true it is, but they specifically said it's like extensively rebuilt from the ground up type stuff. Like, it's not them saying we just made some fucking lovely looking business.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. There's lots of interesting little bits about Demon's Souls that I think because it's before Dark Souls became so big and sort of nailed in the formula, it's got loads of weird little quirks that I'm looking forward to seeing. There's kind of like a light and dark system and all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm pleased that they've done it because it'll give me an actual proper excuse to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy for all the people that wanted it.
Yes.
But it's not one for me. Next up, the game that along with Horizon was the one I'm like, I want to play that now. A bit of Deathloop.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That trailer was just the complete style of it. Before we get onto how good that gameplay looks, the music, just the almost like Hitchcock poster
style.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's like the Vertigo
the
poster, right?
Yeah, it was god, that game.
I have to say,
and it
like,
has made me think I'm a fool for not playing Dishonored yet. And
yeah,
I will
insane. You've
that.
Got to do that. I have to say, like, I am surprised that it doesn't visually look better. Like, it looks like Dishonored 2. It doesn't look like a next-gen game to me. And I think that could hurt it. With Arkane's always had a problem breaking through from, like, the core, you know, like, hardcore players who love that kind of game, and the few people who kind of circle that area and fall in to it. And I don't know if Deathloop's going to be able to fix that, because so much of getting into a game for, like, someone coming to it without knowing exactly what the history is, is going to go on, on face value.
Yeah, there's... I feel like we've learned quite a bit about how that game will work, but there's still so many questions. Like, there's obviously two playable characters. How do they work with each other?
We were talking about this last night. This is, if you've watched NoClip's amazing Arcane documentary that they released recently, this looks like their game, The Crossing, that got cancelled, which was two players playing simultaneously in what otherwise would be a single-player game. And, like, it's fucking fantastic. Like, if that, if they finally got to make the dream game that never got to be made, then I am absolutely delighted for them. That's so cool.
Is that your theory, then, that one person is trying to play the game and the other one is
basically
trying to kill them?
It's not a theory, it's confirmed. It's confirmed on the PS. Then this is why, so when me and Joe were going back through last night to try and clean up, genuinely got quite emotional reading that blog, because the stuff about that, honestly, go and watch the NoClip documentary if you haven't already. The stuff about The Crossing made me feel really emotional when I was watching it, because it's such a good... I remember reading about that game, like, when it was a in development thing, and then you just never heard of it at all, and it's just an absolute pain for them that it didn't get done. And so the idea is that you play effectively... I think what it is going to be, imagine a high chaos playthrough of a Dishonored game. That's what you're doing if you play as Colt, who's the guy. If you play as Juliana, you're invading other people's games to prevent them from completing it. I think the idea is that effectively Colt is the one that you're playing for the story to get like a full experience. As Juliana, that's almost more like the multiplayer side of it, where you're going in, I don't know, they haven't said like if you select what mission you want to play or anything like that, but you're going to turn up in someone else's game and you're going to be able to mess up their attempt to get out of the time loop, which is an incredible idea. Absolutely brilliant.
Like, I'm well up for it. They've said there's, I think in trailer, was it eight people
eight
like almost on your kill list. Do you think it works? It's just one world, one city, and you do a loop and you have to kill all eight in one go, or you
like
can do one, then the loop starts, or...
I just can't see it being that. That feels too high concept for a game being made like this to me. It feels to me more like it'll be... I could easily be talking up my arse here, but like to me what makes sense is like that's eight missions. Like eight big missions in areas where you can be ambushed by the invader. But I don't know. I might be... Maybe they'll... like that would be a very cool like hardcore run thing of like... encouraging speedrunners to kill all eight against incredibly good players.
Maybe they'll do that on the site, because obviously that's very similar then to Moon Crash, which is Prey's roguelike thing, where you had to do a proper run of Moon Crash, you have to escape as five different characters, I think it is, from the moon. And maybe that's a case of like, once you've done all eight targets as individual Dishonored-style missions, maybe you can unlock a... you've got to do the time loop as the fiction suggests it is. And if you die, you go back and have to start doing the targets again.
I could see that.
Yeah, I'm into it. It reminds me of the Sexy Brutale in a way as well. The way time works in that.
The other thing I want to say about Deathloop, aside from the fact that, as I say, it looks incredible, it's a high chaos run, Dishonored. We spoke about diversity earlier. I want to say this is, as an icon of what why diversity is important, this is a game directed by Dinga Bakaba, who is a black man, and it's got two central black characters. It was announced with a Motown record. It's proof that if we can have people that are actually put in good positions, that we don't ignore the diversity element, that we do get great stuff from it.
I can't wait to play that again. Did they ever confirm that that would come to current gen as well?
The blog post says that it is exclusively for PlayStation 5 and there will be a PC release as well.
That is very interesting that a Bethesda game's not coming to Xbox.
I think it's going to be timed, right? Or is it fully exclusive?
Keely did a tweet last night, where it was like, I'm hearing that both Ghostwire and Deathloop are timed exclusives, but the PlayStation blog post, which obviously are biased, but they claim them as PlayStation exclusives, and the Deathloop website, when I was looking at it, said that it was a PlayStation 5 exclusive with a PC release.
Right.
So, if it is true, that is a very good get for them.
Oh, Eurogamer are reporting that it's timed. Who knows? I mean, someone does.
Who knows how long that is? If you want to play that game, though, first, it looks like you have to get a PlayStation 4, or a PlayStation 5, even, or a PC.
What a nice big PC.
Another game. It seems like time loops are all the fashion at the moment. Not only is there Quantum League, but there's also Returnal, which, let's put it out there, that is a bad name for a game.
Yeah, it's like a non-fun revengeance.
It's by Housemart, though, which gives me some hope, because they, although in the last few years I haven't played many of the games, I did enjoy Resogun a lot. Dead Nation was fun. They know how to do a twin-stick shooter. What I couldn't get from this gameplay was, from the trailer even, what the actual gameplay of this game is. There was almost top-down bits, but there was also bits that looked like an FPS.
It's a third-person shooter, they've said.
But it looked very like a bullet hell, the way that they've been designed, like loads of projectiles coming at you.
I don't think we're not going to get a bullet hell from Housemarque anytime soon, like no matter how much they change.
They know what they're good at, and they do it well.
I do really like the idea of using a roguelike not just to randomize, like, map design, but the actual look of the place. Like, the idea that this is some weird, creepy, shifting planet every time you die is a very, like, very cool idea. I don't, like with so much of Housemarque stuff, I think it's designed for the kind of player who wants to achieve perfection, whereas I like to achieve completion, for want of a better term. Like, I like getting from somewhere to the end and learning stuff and having a lovely time. So I don't know whether Returnal's going to work for me, but I love seeing Housemarque mess with the ideas that they're so good at like this. Like, they're a fascinating developer. You don't see anyone making this kind of thing over and over again and making it more and more interesting every time. And I'm really glad Sony seems to prize that from them.
Yep. Also, I did think it was a bizarre way to open the conference with a PS3 game, but GTA 5 is also coming to PS5. That was, I know what they're doing, open with the biggest game that's ever existed.
Yeah.
But it was odd just seeing what looked like a PS3/4 game, and I was like, what? This isn't the future again.
There was genuinely a bit of me that thought that what was going to happen is they would tease GTA 6 at the end. So it was like last gen, next gen. And that didn't happen. This didn't excite me. Like, maybe I'll play GTA 5 again, but I've been playing it for like a fucking decade or something.
I understand GTA Online is a massive, massive thing that people will want to play on PS5 when it comes to it. But if you're gonna show off something from Rockstar, I would have thought, unless they're not doing it, that Red Dead 2 on PS5 is the thing to show.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but they teased that it's expanded. Not only is it enhanced, but expanded.
That's the only thing. Like,
does that mean there is more single player coming
game? If that happens, magnificent. Good. They finally did it. I'm into it. but I just don't believe that's going to be anything other than more heists in GTA Online or something.
Especially, and the more confusing part, it's not coming until the second half of 2021, so it's not coming until like about a year into the PS5 anyway. It's not even there at launch, which, I don't know, are people waiting that long? At that point, people will be asking, where is 6? But who knows?
Yeah.
I trust Rockstar, they know what they're doing, don't they?
I mean, the thing is, they don't even need to know what they're doing, because they'll just keep releasing the same good stuff. Like, they can just keep going, here you go, we'll make another half bill.
How long till GTA 5 on Switch?
I don't think it's going to happen.
They tested it out with L.A. Noire. I don't know how well that did. But
I'll tell you what, I would play Red Dead 1 on Switch.
Absolutely, that's what I wanted. And they didn't do it. Maybe one day.
You bastards!
Ghostwire Tokyo.
This is one of the ones I missed, and I'm furious about it because I'm really excited about the idea of this. So someone explain
it to me. Watch the trailer now.
Should I watch it as we go?
Well, yeah.
Do you want it live?
I remember when this was first revealed. I was in the room at Bethesda's E3 conference last year when they revealed this. And everyone was talking about it. It was one of the best trailers of that.
It was
E3,
wonderful.
If not the best. Then I saw the gameplay yesterday. I'm like, oh, this isn't what I wanted this to be.
Oh.
But maybe I'm harsh on it.
I'm watching it now. It's naughty people.
So I actually haven't properly watched the trailer, but I did write the news post based on the PS blog, so I know roughly what's going on. So it's sort of like a first-person spellslinger to a degree, isn't it, by some of the gameplay?
It was like magic cards at one point as well. I thought this was going to be like... I don't know, I thought it was going to be much more grounded in reality and maybe with some ghost things going on. It's full-on magic, and it confused me from that. The hell this game is now.
Yeah, I think it's very much digging into a lot of Japanese folklore, but kind of putting a modern twist on it. I know from some of the stuff that I read in the PS blog last night, like a lot of the enemies are based on fears and emotions, and one of them manifests as like a child in a yellow.
Oh yeah, I've just seen that.
The classic, yeah, and that is a representation of separation from family. There's one which manifests as a bride that was left at the altar. So there's loss and stuff like that.
I'm pretty sure almost all the internet is more excited for this game than me because I saw a lot of people going mad for it. I don't know. Graphically, it wasn't doing a lot for me. It didn't look like a PS5 game from what I was seeing.
I have to say, I'm kind of with you. I'll tell you what, I really like the idea of like first-person magic stuff. I'm super into that. It doesn't look incredible, like visually, which might be unfair. Because, you know, start of a generation and all that.
Exactly.
I do like the idea of like a horror action game of this kind. Like, because that doesn't really happen. You don't get many of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of have to trust Shinji Mikami. So, yeah, I wish I hadn't watched it.
That's the kind of thing. No, it's the kind of thing of, I think, if I saw that trailer and it didn't have Shinji Mikami intro in it, I would not be as interested.
That's fair.
But I trust
it. Definitely want to know more. But yes, it's not, you're right, it's not the thing that I thought it was.
Another one that was a bit bizarre, from Capcom, which surprised me when
yes,
I found
please.
That out. Pragmata.
Yeah.
Yes.
When this turned up, from the first 10 seconds, I was like, this looks like it's Kojima.
Yeah.
Because it looked like Ludens.
Yes.
His little spaceman character.
His little spaceman. That sounds like you're talking about his dick. Kojima's little spaceman.
He's probably hidden it in a game somewhere.
That's true.
and just the theme of it, like the little girl and the like a apocalyptic scenario in a spaceman. I was like, this got to be Kojima. They're teasing Kojima's next thing. But no, it's a Capcom game coming in 2022, and who knows what. Like, I guess you guys have read all the blog posts. I haven't, because this show was late our time, and I got up this morning and didn't know these existed.
So there's all.
Do you know any more about this?
No, they haven't spoken about it at all. So I'll read you what I wrote
not very
during the show yesterday. Revealed at the PS5 event, the cinematic trailer offered little in the way of concrete evidence of what the game will be, but we saw an astronaut, a little girl, a shattering sky, and they fought a satellite and landed on the moon. That is currently IGN's only official analysis of Pragmata. And that's
what, like,
it's not because we haven't
researched
it.
I'm into weird stuff.
It's just because we don't know what the fuck's going on.
But I'm into it.
I really love when Capcom announces a new IP because of this scale, because Capcom more than most really try weird bullshit on a AAA scale. Like Dragon's Dogma is to me one of my favorite ever games, and it's one of the greatest experiments in like, how do we just fuck with something until it's completely different? Like, we'll take the entire structure of a Western RPG and then we'll just make it absolutely bizarre all the way through. And like, if Pragmata is another version of that kind of thinking, I am super into it. into the idea of finding out what this thing is. But it's not out till 2022, so don't expect to know more soon.
Who knows? Yeah, God knows what that is. But it was interesting. Briefly, well, there's some more not as headline games that we want to talk about. Oddworld Soulstorm, Abe is back. I remember playing, I can't remember which one it is now, but I still remember being at like my cousin's house and playing one of the Abe Odyssey. It might have been Abe's Odyssey. One
was
of them.
Was it inside a factory or was it like in a forest?
It was more industrial. It was
that'll be
PS1.
Odyssey then.
Yeah, I remember playing that one quite a lot and enjoying it as a kid, thinking it was quite silly. And then this again looks silly, but it was a very bizarrely serious trailer as well. It was almost like Mad Max, but with Abe.
I mean, that is what, because Oddworld is it's an allegory for slavery, isn't it? It's actually quite a dour story. It's just dressed up with a bunch of farting Moodocks, are they called, and weird slick creatures that you can possess.
I don't. It's a good one for, like, similar to the Crash Bandicoot effect thing, but not on the same scale, as something people recognise and love as a character, but maybe forget the game's not brilliant. I don't know if that's too harsh, because I tried playing one again recently, I was like, oh, this has not aged well at all.
It's bastard hard. It's so hard. I think I got, like, 7 screens into New and Tasty, and was just like, I'm not here for this. It's too difficult.
But it looks beautiful, and like I said, it did just look like Mad Max, which I know is a lazy comparison for a lot of things like that, but there was a lot of similarities, so I'm having it.
Yeah.
Let me have it. Project Athia. Matt, is this a Final Fantasy game?
As far as I can tell, no.
Okay.
there has been quite a bit of stuff online with people noticing that in the horizon of one of the shots, there is a little bit of architecture that does look very, very similar to some stuff in Final Fantasy 15. I don't think if it was a Final Fantasy game that Gary Witter would be writing it, because it would be Nojima, basically, or at least someone from that team.
That's very fair. Good observation from you.
Final Fantasy has always been very in-house for Square. It's a very protected sort of thing, and I don't think there would be necessarily like freelanced Western writers working on it. I do think it looks good, though. I liked what I saw.
Yeah,
it
was I love that big old, like, jumping across rocks. Mm-hmm. That looked a good. That looked fluid.
Yes, it looked very fluid.
This is the game that, out of all of them, this just looked like the Unreal tech demo, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's from Luminous, which is the production company that was started by Hajime Tabata after Final Fantasy 15 kicked off. Like, did well, and then he got it opened within Square Enix. And the point was to create AAA games, but part of it, I'm looking back at the old news post, the part of it was the new challenge for the Final Fantasy 15 team, so it's meant to be the 15 team, is to create a game and business model 10 years ahead of its time. So, like, what that means for Athia, I don't know, but it's interesting to me that they're talking about business models as well, because is this something beyond, you know, another AAA RPG action game?
That's what I'm thinking. Have they learned from what they've done well with Final Fantasy 15 and are trying to do something online like that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But the weird one is that Tabata resigned in 2018, so he's gone. So it's not even clear if, like, the thing they were making when he set up the studio is even there anymore. It's quite a bizarre story that no one's actually been able to tell yet. He left and they cancelled a bunch of Final Fantasy 15 stuff. So who knows whether that's turned into this, like Versus 13 turned into 15 and that kind of thing. I think this will be one of the more interesting stories as it goes on to find out, like, what the fuck's been going on with this studio until now.
Yeah. I will, we're running a little, little long even, that's the word on time. So let's skim through a few more of these, because they did, I think it was over 24 games they announced last night, which was insane. Stray, you play as a cat trying to, in a cyberpunk world. When I saw this, I was like, Matt will like this.
Love cats. Heart mats. That and the cat in Pragmata as well, isn't it? But it's a digital hologram cat. I'm signed up for both of them. Give me all the cats.
Yeah, I didn't know. This has apparently been around for ages, and it's just been picked up by Annapurna. I haven't yet dug into it, but I do want to go and see what the game is, because apparently, yeah, they've been posting about it for a couple of years.
Nice. Yeah, Annapurna have that reaction now where see it in front of a game, I'm like, this is going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, still got that. Is it 40 days?
12.
Is it 40 days? 12 days? 9 days? It's a number.
Is it days? 12. Is it 12, 12. Minutes?
Is it not 12?
12 minutes. Yeah. There we go. I'm thinking of 40 days, 12 minutes. The other game.
80 minutes. Days is that the game you're thinking of, mate.
80 days, Jesus. I'm thinking of 40 days and night, the Josh Hartnett film.
Isn't that 30 days of night?
I don't know. What's the 40 one? There's a 40.
Jesus Christ.
What's the 40? I'm going to look it up. 40 days. 40 days and night. It's a rom-com.
Okay. Great. 51st dates. It's a I win. Let's go.
It's a rom-com. No, there is a rom-com with Josh Hartnett called 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Okay.
But he's also in 30 Days of Night.
Good on him.
The Josh Hartnett days
carve
universe.
Carve a niche. Isn't 40 Days and Nights when he doesn't wank?
Maybe.
Isn't that a Josh Hartnett film? 40 Days and Nights.
It is, yeah. As for Lent, he stays celibate. Yeah. What a concept.
That's so weird.
Right.
Glad we covered that. The big PS5 news.
Brilliant.
Have you ever seen Josh Hartnett do that Yorkshire accent for the film about doing haircuts?
I don't.
Oh my god, it is up there with Charlie Hunnam. I don't know how I'll show you afterwards. We might reference it in future, but go look up Josh Hartnett's accent. It's fucking hilarious.
Brilliant. Stray look good. You play a cat trying to get back to their owner, I believe, in a cyberpunk city.
Beautiful.
So. I believe that's what I grasped from it anyway. Kenna, Bridge of Spirits. Not the best name for a game, because it reminds me of Bridge to Terabithia. But it looked... We're talking about... this is the other game I was referencing in terms of Ratchet and Clank looking like a Pixar game. This does just look... I know it's a tired thing. It looks like a Pixar movie, but a game. And I like the look of that combat from what I saw.
I'm always up for people seemingly trying to make Zelda, but not Zelda.
It looked to me like the touchstones I got, it was like a classical, like not a Breath of the Wild Zelda, like a classic style Zelda mixed with a bit of Fable to it. It got that Fable feel to the combat, which I'm definitely down for.
I like those little furry friends as well.
Yeah, they look like the little soot guys from Spirited Away.
They do.
I love
them.
The thing to point out about this is that this company who are making it previously made a Majora's Mask fan film, which is bonkers. So,
amazing.
You can tell what kind of references they're into.
Exactly. I'm into that one. Joe, you wanted to talk about Destruction All-Stars.
Genuinely, this is one of my most anticipated games.
It looks fun.
I think this looks brilliant. I love Destruction Derby games. I love games where cars get smashed up. And... this has that, but also a weird hero combat element, seemingly, where you can fucking ride on the cars and jump on them and kick each other and shit. I found out this morning it's being made by a load of people who used to work on Wipeout. I'm not super into the aesthetic of it. You know,
it looks very Fortnite.
Yeah, it's post Fortnite. But fuck, I'm super into the concept. I really want to play this game. It just looks it's the kind of launch game that I always appreciate, one you can just jump in, mess about with. It's kind of the same reason, and I know it didn't go down particularly well, but that fucking Riggs game on PSVR, mech sports, I love that kind of shit, just silly high concept arena stuff where you can jump in, jump out, have a lovely time. I'm looking forward to it.
If they get it right and it is as fun as it looks, then it could definitely have that Rocket League sort of effect.
That feels to me, more than anything else in here, like lunchtime game in the office, when offices exist again.
You're not going to play Pragmata at lunchtime?
Depends what Pragmata is, mate. Who knows?
Could go back on GTA Online, that's free on PS. What I was into was Little Devil Inside. It's hard to get a... comedy writing games a lot of the time. I think it's quite hard to write comedy games, but there was one moment in that when the guy dropped a bomb and then there was a guy on the toilet, and that made me chuckle because it was very stupid.
This is one.
It reminded me kind of almost, not necessarily art style, but the feel of it was quite Aardman-y in a way.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know, the sort of tone to it, the comedy they were going for. But I'm still confused as to what you're obviously playing as a guy hunting monsters, is he? I don't know. But then there's this other guy on the toilet.
Is one that I didn't get to properly watch during the show because I was writing something else, so I'm watching it now. It looks way cooler than I thought it was at the time. It looks to me like you're kind of taking on missions to go hunt monsters and then reporting back to this old man.
To this man on the toilet. Oh, yeah.
He's riding fucking penguins like in Avatar or summer.
There was a lot going on there. I like the art style a lot.
Yeah, you know what? It looks nice. Like a much sort of more pleasant version of Below, that Cappy game.
Yeah, yeah, I can see
which
that.
Which I'm super into. Like, yeah, this looks really cool. I'm well excited for this now.
I will say there was a lot. It did surprise me how many indie games they showed off. I thought they were going to go, here's 6 or 7 huge games for the PS5.
I'm
glad
the
they
variety.
Did mix it up a lot.
The variety of this show was incredible, and I think more than a lot of shows I've watched, this was a case of games are for everyone. There's like something here for so many different demographics of players. It was one of those where I won't buy every one of these games, but I would play every one of them.
Yeah.
There was not one that was just like, well, I don't care for this.
Like I said, we're not going to touch on every single one, but one more we have to mention. We can't go away without mentioning Bugsnax.
I think this is the one I might not play.
Yeah, I know. That was the one I was watching. I was like, this was the one point before they'd shown Horizon, before they'd shown Resi, I think, at that point. I was like, what are they doing? Showing this.
Yeah.
But the Octodad, I played it once through. Fun little game. Good laugh. I'd forgotten it existed, I'm not going to lie. And then this turns up, and it's not my speed. Mm. Not my
It does
humor.
Have animals made of cinnamon rolls, though, which is very cute.
It's not for us, is it? Like, this is a... You're buying this for Christmas, your kids
game.
There.
Exactly.
I like that they say the words that they are. Good Pokemon shit.
Well, at first I thought the little strawberry that was rolling around was saying your name. It sounded like it was saying Scrabbles.
I mean, he should be. but yeah. One thing we haven't got on this list is Hitman 3.
Oh, do you know what? I didn't put it on because... Maybe I should have, actually, because it's a big game. But I just thought in my head, it's Hitman, it looks good, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I find it interesting. Have they ever referred to the World of Assassination trilogy before? Or have they just gone, by the way, it's a trilogy, enjoy yourselves?
Yeah, I think it's always just been the World of Assassination, hasn't it? I don't think they've ever referred to it as a three-part structure or anything.
But they're doing the thing where you can... carry over everything from the past games into this one as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you boot up Hitman 3, you can have, if you own 1 and 2, it'll bring all those missions in and you can just play it as one game.
That's like an unbelievable
it's very
deal.
Smart.
Like, they're so good at that.
I'm not a big fan in general of chapterizing games, but it works perfectly for Hitman for those little worlds. It's the perfect place for it. And yeah, I'll give it a go. I'm playing through Hitman 2 at the moment for the first time.
I'm going to start that this weekend. Joe heard me shout, oh, fuck, another one. Because basically, and Joe was just like, what, another news story? I was like, no, I haven't played
another
2 yet. And
game.
I need to finish it.
Well, I thought in general it was a very good show. It didn't absolutely floor me. There was a few things I thought I'm well into. Mm. But yeah, I thought it was a very... They did a good job of just games,
super,
which is all people want.
Super confident, like, just best foot forward, here's a bunch of fucking stuff. You're going to find something you like in here. You know, I don't like the console design, but before this show, I was increasingly convinced that Series X is my first choice, and now I'm kind of confused and annoyed. Which is as good a response as Sony could possibly hope for from me.
Yeah. Well, in a few weeks. I don't know if they actually announced a date in July when they're doing their first party.
No, they just said it's July.
Okay. Well, it'll have to do a lot to get me on side, but we'll see.
Bring on the Halo, baby.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, one more thing we haven't addressed. were those real people speaking, or were they computer renders?
No, of course they were real people.
I don't know what... Exactly. I was watching this saying, what are people talking about? They've just lit a shot in a slightly not standard way, but they were definitely real people.
Yeah.
What?
Like, very strange. What's going on here? Very strange.
Anyway. Just do an end this search, shall we?
Yeah. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Joe, you themed it.
Yeah, so, don't get me wrong. I haven't actually considered this. I have too much on. So this might be an absolute nightmare. But what I wanted to do... Is this good? I was going to read out, like...
You've committed
I was going to read out little bits of the blog posts surrounding games announced at yesterday's conference, and you have to guess what it is based on those things. But I will say, okay, I've done almost no preparation. All right? So, okay, let's just see how it goes.
And we've just talked about them all in depth, so hopefully...
Well, not all of them, mate. Not all of them.
No, there's a few we didn't. That is very true.
Okay, let's try... Let's try this. Is this going to be fun? Memorable combat encounters. Memorable combat encounters.
Memorable combat encounters. Bug snacks.
No.
This one's harder than I wanted it to
Resident
be.
Evil 8.
No. Boys, it's Deathloop, obviously. Come on. They're memorable.
Oh, come on. You're just reading out buzzwords.
Yeah, it's buzzword time.
Yeah, this is PR speak. The quiz.
How about this? A cinematic choice based narrative game.
That's
very specific.
Choice based.
Is that Volcano High?
Correct.
There we go. Oh, we didn't talk about that.
Dinosaurs go into a high school.
Not my style. That. I don't like that style of animation, personally.
I don't know if that's in game or not. I assume it is. I don't really know. It was slightly confusing to me.
Well, at least I now know it has a choice-based narrative.
Yeah, choice-based narrative. Like, it looks like Life is Strange with dinosaurs, and I'm kind of into that. So that's cool. Alien, lush but grotesque, peaceful at times and supremely violent in others.
Returnal?
No.
Oh.
This is another one we haven't talked about.
Oh.
Oh,
no.
Bloody hell.
Oh, no. Let me quickly look at the list of ones. Is that Jet the Far Shore?
It is not Jet the Far Shore.
Oh, is it? I'm just going to start reading them out. Go on, Matt, you have a go.
I'm just opening up our breakdown.
I think I might know what one it is now. Is it?
Is it Godfall?
It is Solar Ash.
It's Solar Ash. I forgot about
that. I'm more interested in Godfall than I thought I would be, actually.
Yeah, I am now.
If it's good, if it is just Borderlands with good melee combat, I could be into that.
Tom Marks did a very good observation, which is that team made a game called Duelist before, which was a very cool card game that I never properly played because it didn't come out on consoles I had, or, you know, like, devices I had at the time. But it does look like they took concept art made for Duelist to turn into pixel art and just turned it into big 3D art, which is a very interesting thing. Like, it feels like they're just kind of using their style in a whole new way. Well done, Tom Marks. What about...
Yeah.
Here we go. Snacktooth Island.
Well, if that's not bug snacks,
yeah,
then I don't know what
yes, it
is. It is, because I wrote the news story for
Snacktooth Island, baby. Let's go. Is this fun? Should I stop?
Do one more.
All right, we'll do one more. Let's have a look.
Oh, there's one more we didn't talk about, actually.
What's that?
Maybe maybe you'll do the blog post.
Do you think I will?
We can move on to
it. I don't know if I will.
I just want to say how much I now love the little Astrobots, and I'm glad they've got another game.
Oh,
coming.
That's quite a cool thing, because apparently it's free. It's preloaded on every console. And B, it's like four worlds themed around different features the console has.
So, like, nice. You'll be messing with
it's
them.
Kind of what they... Yeah, they did that with the PlayStation VR, yeah. Didn't they? And
yeah.
I love the little Astrobots now.
Yeah, it was cool.
Come on, Joe, give us one more buzzword.
Okay, I'm going to have a buzzword for you. Let's have a quick look. It's just...
I'm going to say it now. Don't take offence to this. This may not be a return.
No, I agree. Twisted, tempestuous, and forbidding. It does reveal how much bullshit language goes into these
that's
things.
Project Athia, isn't it?
It is Project Athia.
Oh, yeah. someone's written the news. Congratulations.
All right, I'm done with that game.
There we go. What a great
I
game.
I love that game.
Right, now we've got a few pieces of feedback. Do write in to IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. What were you most excited about from the PlayStation 5 conference? And what do you want to see from Xbox, maybe?
Yeah, that's a good one. To the person who wrote, clearly very drunk after the event, we considered reading it out, but then I kind of want your permission to. Because you might not remember writing it.
But yeah, maybe try again. or follow up with it. Right, yeah, bit of feedback, and then after that,
Last of Us business.
The Last of Us 2. So who's got the first one? Oh, it's me. I've got one here from Gavin Greer. He says, "Well, hello there."
Hello.
Tries to surprise you there. as industry experts, mm-hmm. I wouldn't call myself that. Maybe Joe would.
100%. Yeah, biggest expert on industry that there is. Wow. Jonathan Industry, call me in the industry.
Okay, well, answer this then. As industry experts with presumably some inside knowledge, please can you tell me why digital games are more expensive than physical? I thought this was a good lead-on because obviously you can get the digital-only PS5. And, you know, is it worth the money in the long run? That's what you want to say. Let's take The Last of Us 2 for an example. It's $54.99 on the PS Store, and the physical edition is $49.99. I knew there's a few Wii in game this.
You should just cut this bit out.
But still. Yeah, I should have. right. Another example is Control, which is $49.99 on the PS Store. But you can buy the physical for under $30. This is something I've thought about for ages. There's no packaging or distribution costs involved in digital, so why are they not much cheaper? I can only assume it's one of two reasons. One, hosting a game online is very expensive. Or two, it's part of a worldwide conspiracy agreement that digital games don't undercut physical because it would really damage so many industries. Packaging, printing, distribution, etc. Look forward to hear your musings on
Gavin,
this.
Gavin,
I don't think there's a conspiracy.
It's neither of those things.
Neither.
It's because primarily, obviously you're buying physical copies from retailers who buy those games at a lower price and can set their own cost margins. So they want to undercut themselves or, you know, each other as well as digital editions. They want you to keep coming to their shops and buying their stuff, so they'll price it lower and take less of a cut. The other being that digital doesn't need to go down in price because it is a format of convenience. They can charge you more because you don't have to leave your house. And they know that enough people will be swayed by that they don't have to do it. Like, it's the same reason that Nintendo games never go down in price, because they're essentially the Disney of games. They know that people will buy their games at full price, so they almost never formally price drop them beyond sales.
You've also got the fact that there's no competition.
Yeah.
Like, there is no competition for the PlayStation Store because you cannot buy digital PlayStation games really anywhere else.
You can buy codes from resellers for certain things. Yes.
And those resellers do tend to be the grey market, as opposed to there are less easy, legitimate ways of buying.
Yep.
So that's why, you know, as much as in the PC space, as much as people hate the idea of Epic, it is good that Steam actually has proper competition now, because it means that Steam are less able to set the price and dictate what that has to
Absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you think you'd go digital only for PS5?
Like I said before, I don't think I actually can until I'm sure that people aren't going to send me disc copies ahead of time. Like, it could actually stop us doing our jobs, which is annoying because I have to have the fucking hump, and I don't like the hump.
You hate camels, you've always said that.
I don't hate camels, they're designed to have a hump. Game consoles shouldn't. We get to choose how those evolve. Someone's chosen to put a hump on it. That's insane.
You're very angry about
this. I hate
this.
The hump. I hate the hump.
You got a hump about
I do. My humps. Right.
Your lovely lady humps. Matthew.
Right, shall I take this one from Tom Meadows? Go. Duck Hunt?
No.
Ooh,
classic intro.
I'll do it. Duck Hunt.
Here in sunny South Derbyshire, we call those frozen fruity treats ice poles. Mm. This is a reference to several conversations over the last few weeks about ice lollies.
Ice poles, yeah.
And they were a regular refreshing treat when we used to play football on the local park of the summertime.
They were ice poles or ice pops.
Yeah.
Either or.
Tip tops in my area. We used to buy them from the nearest chip shop.
Interesting.
From
place
chip
to get.
Shop. Okay. Interesting location. That was owned by a very stern Turkish man called Ken. I remember this very well because Ken had a finger on each hand amputated.
Is he in the Yakuza?
And I remember maybe he's an assassin, you know, because they amputate their fingers to put the hidden blade in.
Mr. Ken Yakuza.
the classic Turkish name.
I remember being very scared of ever having a sausage from there in case he accidentally removed another one.
Do you think he's putting his fingers in sausages?
And then battering them.
Did you have a scary local shop owner when you grew up?
I don't remember a scary one. I remember my local fish and chip shop, actually. It was one of those that was a fish and chip shop and a Chinese takeaway.
Oh, yeah, we had some of those.
You got the fish and chip chips that were also cooked in the like Chinese cooking oil, so they tasted a bit different.
One of my friends at uni once ordered chips and gravy from one of those combo shops, and they put black bean sauce on it instead, and it was the saltiest chips of all time. It's powerful.
Amazing. But yeah, he wasn't scary. But he was one who always, like, I remember going there when I was like 4 or 5. Like, he'd always want to talk to everyone, and even the kids. And one time, he just looked at my dad, looked at me, and went, "He's got naughty in his eyes," and I'll always remember that because it's probably true.
The guy that ran our the spa in our, like, as in spa, SPAR in our village was we just known as Grumpy George, and he was such a prick. And then I think he died of a heart attack, and everyone felt really sad because it was like, oh, Grumpy George was actually probably an all right guy, just, you know, just problems with the old ticker. Anyway.
Yeah, it was just grumpy.
Back to Tom. On the subject of leisure centre food, whenever we went swimming...
What a varied and interesting podcast we are. Leisure centre food.
Again, if you're waiting for the very highly anticipated Last of Us 2 chat, you're going to have to get through the leisure centre food segment.
Whenever we went swimming, my mum used to buy me a cup of chicken soup and a bag of chicken Walker's crisps from the vending machines. I'd sit and dip the crisps in the soup, and I can still remember the taste mixed with the heavy chlorination of my lips.
Tom Meadows, you're a beautiful writer. It's so redolent. I can almost taste it, and I never had it.
In chicken soups.
That's like chicken. Cool croutons.
Anyway, I also have a story about a holiday disaster, but I'm not sure anybody wants the details of dreadful food poisoning while on my honeymoon. Mm.
It doesn't sound fun. Food poisoning, I've had it once, and it was absolutely horrible.
I'm lucky I've escaped it. Never had it. Nor do I want it.
I got it once after a Christian gave me a sausage, but that's a story for another time.
What?
I say, I'm not telling you.
Anyway.
Okay, well,
keep up the good work.
Feedback, then.
Oh, okay.
Not you, Joe. And stay safe.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've got to throw in the... me not wanting... you know... Me not wanting to read out compliments isn't wanting people to tell me that I'm shit, by the way. Just so we cleared that up on the podcast.
No, I think you should carry on.
This is from Mike Tapia. Hello, big boy team. I like that.
Ooh.
Got some fun / scarring holiday and food anecdotes for you. Story one. This starts not how I expected. My dad and I were visiting family out in the Ecuadorian jungle. As you do, he says.
I would love to have family in the Ecuadorian jungle.
We were playing outside with my cousin when one of their dogs got a bit overexcited and took a good old bite out of my leg. Not knowing how domesticated and not wild said dog was, he rode his luck and declined to inform my mum back home. Good news, I didn't develop rabies. Bad news, when mum found out, she went ballistic.
I would have got that test, but I'm glad you're safe.
Story two. Used to work at Pizza Hut, where late finishes often resulted in a trip to the curry house round the corner. You worked in a Pizza Hut? Make a pizza.
You can't have that every day, though.
Don't know. One night after closing, we had some leftovers. Here we go. I've spoken too soon. One night after closing, we had some... I'm hungry as fuck reading this. We had some leftovers and proceeded to create the greatest pizza known to man. The stuffed crust chicken dansack. Topped with cheese, chilies, and bargee crumbs, it will never be bettered. That is the best sounding pizza I have ever heard of.
So what are we saying, that the actual stuffed crust was filled with chicken dansack?
Even if it isn't, I'm choosing to believe that it is. Because fuck me. I've still not had one of those Domino's with the hot dog in the pizza crust. I want that.
I don't know if I want that.
Give it to me.
Story three. Sorry, I burped. Due to a spontaneous brainwave, me and a friend skipped college one afternoon to go back to his house. Why? To make Angel Delight. That's fucking why.
I love Angel Delight.
I love our listeners. Three packs of Angel Delight, each with its own unique twist. Strawberry mixed with marshmallows. Chocolate mixed with Milky Bar buttons. And, this is my personal favourite, Joe Screvel's saying this, butterscotch mixed with Milky Way magic stars.
Butterscotch one is a dream.
Butterscotch Angel Delight is a flavour that will never leave my brain. I can taste it just thinking it.
So
we indulged in all three concoctions over a massive session of Risk.
That is very Partridge.
Before I retired home to feel sicker than I ever thought possible. I hope you've learned something today.
I've learned that I desperately want some Angel Delight back in my life.
I've learned that Mike Tapia's a fucking genius. I love that.
Imagine chicken dansack pizza with a side of Angel Delight.
I should say, by the way, I know loads of people have sent them in. We didn't do this. We haven't done this already. Like a big drowning section, have we? Oh, did
we
you do it last week?
Last week I was like, this is not the week for it.
Good.
I don't know.
When there's not
so many, we could even just do a one-off. It'd be such a weird thing.
When there's a week that's not like world industry-changing news or world events, we will do a full section on all your most hilarious drowning stories.
Because that's how we roll. Thank you, guys. I've still got more to come because Dale's about to appear.
I know.
And
with his privileged information.
I haven't edited this podcast yet, obviously, because we're still recording it. Because that's how the workflow works. I'll probably play a bit of Last of Us music and then talk about
that.
Last of Us. Again, absolutely no spoilers. Do not worry. It is story spoiler free. But of course, if you don't want to hear anything, don't listen. Yeah.
Fuck off is what he's saying. Squares.
Welcome back. It's Last of Us Review Day. Well, Last of Us 2 Review Day. Last of Us Review Day was 7 years ago, Dale.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Dale. I haven't been on this podcast until now.
Yeah. Well, I've introduced you now. You would have been teased. if you haven't read our official IGN review of The Last of Us, Jonathan Dornbush has done an excellent job. It's on the site and on YouTube. He has given it the sacred 10 out of 10. The masterpiece. That means both. Is this the first time two games in the series have got a 10. It must be.
No, Uncharted.
There must be Mario games. No, I think only one. Only Uncharted, Uncharted 3 got a 10.
Okay, so two didn't then.
Yeah. No.
Zelda, I guess, probably.
Heated. Oh, yeah, it's probably... Do you know what? I've probably made a point that didn't need to be made. Let's talk about The Last of Us Part 2. I agree with Jonathan 100%. This is as easy a 10, I think, as you can give a game, to be honest. As soon as I... Not even before I'd finished it, I was like, this is a phenomenal piece of work. It is maybe the best story I've ever seen told in a game, the best character writing, the best performances.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the gameplay is just vastly improved on the original. I personally really like the original's gameplay. I think it's serviceable. It helps tell the story very well. But this just builds on it in every way and makes it feel like... Just, yeah, like I said before, like Metal Gear Solid at times, like Resident Evil at times, but with that just storytelling that you get from a Naughty Dog game.
Yeah, but I would say it's storytelling that I don't think you could experience in any other format. I won't go into it too much, but the device of how it tells the story is I've never seen before. And it's like phenomenally done. Like it's truly engaging, and that's what I think. Like they set such a high bar with the first game. That's you say it. You know, it was an easy 10, but you know, having to follow up on something so successful is a tough thing to do. And I think they've gone beyond that by changing the format, not just making a safe sequel. It truly like tries new things, and it's inventive in that form.
Yeah, it is just. It's so hard to not say. We're not going to spoil anything, don't worry. There's no spoilers here. But the way they just make you feel for these characters, the way they just make you feel unexpected feelings for these characters, I feel like it's safe to say, like, over the course of these two games, Ellie has maybe the best character arc I've seen in pretty much anything. Like,
yeah.
Throw films in there, throw TV in there. Like, Ellie as a character is now... gone from me from being a very good character to just one of the best fictional characters I've ever seen.
Yeah, and they established in the first game, like with the ending of the first game, how that no one in this, they're not heroes in the traditional sense, like, you know, and it's not a protagonist that you're necessarily always rooting for, and they continue that motif in this game as well. Like you said, they're phenomenally written characters, but not someone that you can always agree with or get behind as well. And I think, you know, only in video games can you sort of portray this way of storytelling.
Well, I think like all the best characters are like there's a lot of analogues. There's a reason this game is called The Last of Us Part 2, because The Godfather Part 2 is a big inspiration on it, and you can see a lot of that in there. Even from when you open up the game for the first time, the menu screen is just a picture of a motorboat, which if you're familiar with The Godfather Part 2, you know, plays a big part in that film.
Yeah.
But just the way you've got Michael Corleone in that film, who is just not a nice person. You've got, you know, you've got The Sopranos, you've got Mad Men, like the lead characters in these, in some of the greatest fiction, aren't characters that are particularly nice people. And I'm not saying that Ellie isn't a nice person, but there will be times when you'll be tested.
I mean,
to be on her side.
It's a world that doesn't facilitate you to be constantly nice, right? You have to be ruthless, and you have to do what's best for you at the time. And sometimes, from our sort of cushy viewpoint, it seems like the wrong decision, but, you know, it's the world that they're living in and reacted to.
That leads nicely onto the gameplay and how this is just... I think I said it last week. I was also on Podcast Beyond this week, if you want to hear more of me talk about this
was
game.
You?
I'm trying to not repeat exactly what I said there. But it is the most violent game I think I've ever played without becoming gratuitous at all. It's not... There probably are more violent games out there, like if you look at like Manhunt or Mortal Kombat, but it's all a bit silly violence, whereas this is just... tough to look at.
Well,
at times.
I was playing it earlier today, actually, for work for capture stuff, and I noticed something as well. Like, anytime it does get sort of borderline gratuitous, the characters acknowledge it as well. Like when Ellie like runs up and stabs someone in the throat, she'll say like, "Oh fuck," or like she'll react in a way like that was gross as well. It feels real, like she didn't mean for it to be that grim. She's just doing what she needs to do to survive. And as I'm sure you're like me, every time you do a shiv attack on anybody, you pan that camera around and look at the faces as well, like the detail and the animation.
It's absurd. I mean, they are good at making games, Naughty Dog. I think people know that by now, but like, they just seem to raise the bar every single time they make something. Mm. And yeah, story-wise, this is just, gameplay-wise, it's just surpassed the original in every way, which I, you know, like a lot of people, when the original finished, you were like, that is a perfectly told story.
Yeah.
And it's wrapped up nicely. I don't need any more. But they have found a story here that is better. And yeah, I don't know where to start on without spoiling anything, really.
It's,
but
it's really tough. I would say as well, it's for people's expectations, this is a substantially longer game than the first one as mm-hmm. well, like quite significantly longer. And apart from maybe a couple of sections that I think, it's a minor complaint, they maybe dragged a slightly bit, like it does breeze by. It feels like it's consistently good. The quality level is always high consistently for this game.
Well, the narrative structure helps that a lot, I think, and for a lot of people, I think, I personally think Uncharted 4 is brilliant. I understand people think The Last Island goes on a bit too long, and I would kind of agree on that. There's one too many encounter bits, like at that point you just want it to get on with the story, which that's where I think The Last of Us has the edge, is that every single scene, even if it's not a key plot point, there is a bit of story being told along the way.
It's always story,
Yeah, and, it, you know, no fight is really the same. The infected are, I think we both agreed, they don't appear as tough as in the first game, but when there is a mixture of infected, like the new shamblers, they can be a problem if mixed with clickers, and
you
just get caught in a corner. And the stalkers, which I think they only briefly appeared in the basement section of the original, and you don't really, that's the only time you really encounter them, but they are just horrifying to play against this time. They just, because you're so attuned to at that point in both of these games using listening mode, like when you enter any room, but the stalkers just don't appear on listening mode, so you're like, I don't know where they are, and as soon as one lands on you, there's going to be another one around the corner. It's just, I just ran through those sections, I'm not ashamed to say.
Did you?
Sprinted straight through.
I have to clear out every room before I move on. I can't do it. Although I have, in the previous game I did, when I was playing it on the harder modes, I did work out ways to just get past people and sneak out. And you know, you can do that again in this game. It gives you the option to do that. Mm-hmm. It's, but I think the infected, they not necessarily feel like a massive step up for me. Like, it felt very familiar how to deal with them. Like, my go-to tactic every time is throw a bottle to a location, wait for them all to swarm there, throw a Molotov cocktail, take them all out. Like, that's my go-to tactic. What the step up for me is the human interactions, like with the wolves and the Seraphites. Like, though they feel so much more like smart, and like they're in tune with their environment, and they know the best ways to flush you out. It never feels like they're on a scripted path. It always feels like they're communicating with each other. Like, they all have names and relationships as well, and they'll refer to each other by names and say, oh, why don't you go check over there, and they'll go by and they'll say, oh no, Kira's been killed, and you know, they say it more dramatic than that.
Kira Knightley's gone. Oh no.
They also have dogs of them as well, who they, like, the dogs have names as well. And I don't know if you ever killed one of the dogs before, in front of their owners before.
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people will have a problem with killing dogs. I like dogs, but I'm not like a massive, dog person. So I just found it a lot easier to take them out, because it makes your life a lot easier in that game if you get rid of the dogs.
If you saw a cutscene, a clip at the end when a dog bites your face off to death, you'd want to kill them as well. Like, they are vicious. But when you kill them in front of their owners, like, they react so badly to that as well, and then they're baying for your blood at that point. And I just think the AI is so smart this time around, it makes every encounter feel different as well.
Exactly, yeah. It's, and I can't overstate this enough, this is a dark game. It is not a laugh. But what I will say is, although it has much dark moments, it kind of leads on from Left Behind in the way it does things a lot. Like, there's a lot of dark moments, but there's also, I'd say, a lot more high and just quieter, calmer moments than the original ever had.
Yeah.
And they're some of my favourite bits, I think. The way this game uses music is incredible. Like, the score for the first game is unbelievable, and this uses bits of that, and the battle music this time seems a lot, I noticed it a lot more, there's a lot more electronic elements, and the way they just, there's obviously not going to spoil anything, the way they use a few actual real songs in the game as well is just amazing.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to sort of go into that too much, but yeah, like, you're in for a treat. Like, I would say as well, like, as somebody who's I've played it through like 1 3/4 times right now, and I'm going through trying to find all collectibles and things like that, I'd say explore, like, take as much time as you can and explore every crevice, because there's so many things I missed the first time around, like little hidden like dialogue options and just references and things. There's tons of detail in that world as well, like downtown Seattle especially, like that's one of the locations you visit, and there's so much to see and do there. Like, really take your time with it as well.
Well, yeah, that's where they've taken a lot of the inspiration from Lost Legacy, and it's kind of like that area you go in is almost like a little mini open area, a little mini open world area, and there's so much just environmental storytelling to find there. I thought I was really like scouring that area when I played it at first, and it turns out I found like a third of the collectibles and like conversation stuff in that area. So yeah, but I was caught in that place of wanting to find everything in the area, but also the plot is so compelling that I was like, I just need to see the next cutscene, or I need to get to the next place.
Sure, but sometimes with those dialogue options, you're adding elements to the plot. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly the details, but I know there was something where the first time around, I'd clearly missed out on a line of dialogue. And then I'm not going to say, I'm just being as ambiguous as possible. Something happened and I was like, what are they talking about? And then on my second playthrough, I heard a line of dialogue that sort of gave that more context. Okay. So like, you know, they're constantly filling in, and also character building as well. Like, we can't understate how good the character building is consistently.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I don't know what situation you were in, I can't remember, that I managed to play this game without having anything spoiled for me. And that is the way to go. And obviously people were, the whole game leaked a few weeks ago, supposedly. I'm not going to say if any of that is right or wrong. But even if you read all that, you have not had this game ruined. I want to just reassure people that there is no way you have experienced this game if you have seen spoilers for it.
I mean, that is crazy, right? Looking at a bullet point version of it is not the same. Like, what if you made Star Wars into a bullet point version? It's like, yeah, they fly in a ship and then they blow it up. The end. It's just like, it takes all the romanticism out of it and all the excitement and the characters.
I can't wait for more people. So far, I've talked to a handful of people in the world that have played it, and like everyone I've spoken to so far is pretty much in the same position we are. I haven't spoken to anyone who doesn't think this is a masterpiece, and I can't wait for everyone else to play it so we can at some point do a more spoilery thing about it and talk properly about it. And yeah, I just want to, it's hard to say. I was thinking about this earlier, like, is it the best PlayStation 4 game? Because the original Last of Us is arguably the best PlayStation 3 game, and it came right at the end. I think there's a very strong argument that you could call this. It's between this and God of War for me, and I think gameplay-wise, God of War edges it for me, because that game just feels phenomenal to play, and I'm more of that sort of combat guy to a stealth game in general. But writing-wise, story-wise, it's on a par, if not slightly ahead of God of War, I think.
For me, it's too early to say. I'd need to sit with it for a bit. But I think, they're both, like, without a doubt, I think they are the two games. Like, if you, when we're going to talk about PS4 in 10 years' time, they are the two games that everyone is going to mention. Whether one's better or the other doesn't really matter, I suppose. They're just they're both fantastic. I would say as well, for the nerds out there like me, the trophy hunters, it is an obtainable platinum as well. Like, I am on my way to getting it.
That is, I'm sure, calming everyone down.
They just wanted to know, that's what they were waiting for.
It will take a very special game for that not to be game of the year so far for me. I can only think of a handful that would have a chance, but the way that story is told, I don't know.
Like, literally, what are you thinking? Like, Cyberpunk, like, maybe?
Unless Cyberpunk is, we don't know what's launching next gen yet. Well, by the time, you know, we're recording this, just so you know, a few hours before the PS5 reveal, and we don't know what's coming in that, so who knows? You will have heard us talk about it, although previously in this podcast, so we're doing a bit of time twisting. But, we will. So far, just so you know, it's only me and Dale who have played the game so far. So if next week you get your hands on the game and have questions, can I just ask you very politely to put spoilers for The Last of Us in the subject line to feedback? Because people like Joe, Matt and Jesse and Al haven't had a chance to play yet, and I don't want them ruined by an email.
Well, Alex is going in blind as well. Like, he hasn't watched any trailers or anything. So, exactly. Like, you know, save
didn't
it
even
for
read
him.
My preview. My boss didn't even read my work. So
it's all right, mate. Someone did. I'm sure someone did.
Did they, though? Did they?
if only there was some way to look at the numbers and see how many people read it.
If only Google Analytics existed. That is... As you can hear, we quite like this game.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I can't wait for everyone to play it.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait to talk about it openly as well.
Exactly. There is so much to talk about. And, yeah. I don't want to go into it right now, but I do so much. Should we have a bit of Last of Us Part 2 music? We had Last of Us Part 1 last week. Do you think that it's going to, in retrospect, be called Last of Us Part 1 now? Like, The Godfather was just... is just The Godfather. It's not The Godfather
you need. I don't know. That's something that feels like maybe if it was a continual series, if they kept releasing parts. Yeah. But no, probably not. Because it's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? The Last of Us Part 2.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I haven't seen what music is out there from the game yet. But
I was
going to
say, I would suggest one of the ones we sort of alluded to earlier, but we don't want to spoil what they are.
I'll find something, even if it's that song they accidentally ripped off from the last trailer.
Okay. No.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nail, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.